Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, episode 5. My name is Joey. I'm here with Len. Len, how you doing, brother?
I'm great. How are you, Joey?
No complaints, my man. The price of Bitcoin in American dollars at the moment is $54,031.
In Canadian, I got $66,786.11.
And it's April 26, 2021. Len, what is in the news this week?
All right, so let's go to the big news items we have on the agenda here. And the big one, right off the top, I have ShakePay and Visa. So a new Visa card was announced by ShakePay. The launch of a new Visa prepaid card for ShakePay customers issued by Marqeta's sponsoring financial institution, People's Trust Company. The ShakePay card features Bitcoin cashback, aka Satoshis, on everything users buy. All Satoshis will be settled to their ShakePay Bitcoin balance and will be separate from their ShakePay card balance. The rollout date is currently unknown. You could get on a waiting list for the ShakePay app, and you can move up the waiting list by sending money to other ShakePay users. It's kind of a game right now that's going on amongst the ShakePay community. I did a little bit of digging to see what sort of competition exists in the Canadian market, and there is the Mogo prepaid Visa, where you could earn 1% in Bitcoin cashback. What that means is you'll be earning 1% cash back, and those cash rewards can be used to buy Bitcoin via their trading platform. You're not, in fact, getting 1% in straight Bitcoin in every purchase. Another competitive card I see is the crypto.com Midnight Blue Card. That's a mouthful to say. You'll be earning 1% cash back paid out in CRO tokens, an altcoin native to crypto.com. Whatever you do with your crypto rewards is up to you. You could keep holding your rewards in CRO tokens, trade them for another crypto like Bitcoin or Ethereum, or even sell them for Canadian dollars, all via the Cards app. Anything to talk about here, Joey? Anything you want to say?
Well, I got a few things on my mind. First and foremost, the difference here between what I see from ShakePay and what you see from a lot of these other companies are the prepaid balance. It's the prepaid balance that really makes a difference. So everyone's got these consumer-facing retail credit cards, do cashback and other things of that nature, but it's always on a debt vehicle. And so you can kind of picture in your head, even if you can't draw the details out, you can see how that business model works. They give you a bit of rewards, and ultimately they ding you on whatever the interest is. I don't know what credit cards are yearly, like 22, 24% or something like that, maybe higher in some cases. Yeah, they're high. So I like this. This is a good, it's a good Bitcoin ethos relationship, we'll say, between the spending mechanism they're trying to put in place here and what Bitcoin stands for, sort of the long time horizon. Don't take debt unless it's against your house or something to buy Bitcoin, to add to your problems. So I like that. That's one thing. Canadians have been hungry for something like that for a long time. You see that in the Canadian Bitcoin chat. You see that on Canada or Bitcoin CA, I should say, on Reddit. So this is, it's all good news. Now, here's the thing that I think is more important. This ShakePay $5 ping pong thing. Okay. I just had one come through right now from a guy named OPSO. So if you ever have any money to send, OPSO always sends money. I don't know that guy or girl, but that's part of the game. So this is the thing I think is more important. There are competitors for this type of peer-to-peer quick exchange in the Canadian market, but it's in its infancy. So Wealthsimple has a cash arm, a cash app, I'll call it, though it's not the same obviously as the famous American one, that will allow you to send stuff like this from your Wealthsimple account. So if you have a Wealthsimple cash account, you can use that money to invest, or you can use that money to send to your friends. Okay, fine. I personally think this app, the ShakePay app, and this new design with the ping pong back and forth with people and the game that's sort of being facilitated by the official ShakePay account, it's better. The app is cleaner. It looks a lot more modern. And this is, to me, this is a really big win for them, man. Is there a company in the Canadian crypto sphere, you think, that's like more obviously hammering, like crushing than ShakePay has in the last, I don't know, 18 months?
They're pretty darn good. One thing that they're doing here with allowing us to exchange money, like the small little bits of money to move up on the ladder here, it shows that they're a viable way of actually moving money from one person to another. So it's kind of showcasing what they have under their belts here. So it's another thing they're showing off what they have. So kudos to them.
It's incredible to watch the growth of that app from where it was, you know, 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago when we first started using it to where it is now. Even my wife, who's a graphic designer by trade, said to me the other day that, you know, it kind of flew under the radar for her as well, but that the app is just so clean. Like the use and UI flow going from opening the app, signing in to the shaking, to the money sends, to everything is spot on. And like, I obviously we're ShakePay users, but we're not getting paid by them. Their support team is incredible. I know that there's been a lot of commentary on like the ShakePay subreddit and the Canadian Bitcoin subreddit about wait times, but fuck man, these guys are having onboarding volume like they have never had before. And they're trying to hire to keep up and they're doing all the right stuff. And still they get back to you pretty quickly with a decent response, man. Always kind. And it's always something that, you know, will help you figure out whatever problem you're having.
So there's one criticism that I hear, and actually I came across with in my own studies. I've been looking at all the different exchanges and see what the spread is amongst them. And ShakePay is kind of on the higher end. So if you are going to be purchasing BTC or Ethereum, and that's the only two coins that are available under the platform, is just Ethereum and Bitcoin. Unless you plan on purchasing, you know, small amounts, you're okay. But when you purchase a lot of it, you know, I don't know where the breakneck, you know, the point of no return would be, but maybe $10,000, I'd have to look into it. But you're paying a lot more than say like Newton or NDAX or somewhere else. So that spread can be detrimental for somebody that's trying to get in with a lot of money.
Do you think that it's worth mentioning though, that the ecosystem in and of itself is becoming stickier and stickier? Like now you're going to have the card there where you're going to put money in to use the card. You're going to have the transfers cash from user to user. You have the shake already, and knock on wood, at least as far, at least today, they still pay the transfer fees. So like there was a time back in like, you know, December, January, where the transfer fees were $50 a shot, man. Like that's a lot of money for them to just absorb. They have no marketing budget. So I would argue that all this stuff and the community growth and the community enthusiasm has proven that a marketing budget may be not as important as I think some crypto companies thought. I'm looking at you, Coinsquare, running, you know, ads in the mainstream television networks and during prime time, right?
Word of mouth makes a huge difference, and they're able to, you know, get a foothold in the market here. A lot of people, they like the shaking gimmick that comes along with ShakePay, gives them free stats. So yeah, so they, you know, it's definitely growing, and it's, as you mentioned, now with very little marketing.
What would it take you to get off ShakePay as your primary like platform? What would happen for you to leave? Because you've done, to your credit, you've done all these like incredible videos on how to buy crypto on every Canadian platform. Definitely go check those out on our YouTube channel. More to come. Yes. And so like you've done all the homework. So all you've said so far, and I think, you know, we talked about it privately a bit too, about the spread, and the spread is known. The spread on ShakePay is a little higher than you would expect or maybe want, but like still, even though both of us have the wherewithal and the means to go somewhere else, we haven't gone. So what would it take for you to leave?
The shaking. If the shaking disappears, the shaking for sats, if that's gone, I have no reason to stay on board. Potentially the Visa card will keep me on board, but you know, only time will tell. I'm curious to see what are the conditions along with the Visa card. It's still yet to be known. And still, we don't know when it's going to be released. It could be a year from now. It could be a few months from now. Who knows? Between now and the time it's released, we could have some competitors that release something that may be better than what ShakePay is going to be producing. We don't know.
ShakePay already has, like, you can shake and not buy there. You know that. So you can shake and not buy, but you still go there and buy too.
Yes.
Yeah. So the shaking, even if the shaking, you know, you could I don't know. I just think it's a good service, man. I want someone from that show to come on and talk to me about the spread, or from that platform to come on and talk to me about the spread and talk to me about the shaking sats thing and the likelihood that continues. Because I, like, as an onboarding tool, at least for my friends, it's invaluable. Because if you tell people that they can just open up their phone every day, shake it and get cash or get Bitcoin, like, it's a no-brainer. But I don't know. Maybe they're thinking about changing that. I know they've been finally throttling the rewards, but...
Well, it's not just the spread. Another thing to consider, I have a spreadsheet on the go, and it's the buy-in too. Sometimes there's a cost associated with purchasing. Some exchanges are percentage-based, and some there's even like a hard fee associated with it. So every time you buy cryptocurrency, you're paying. I don't know the exact number for which. I'll be releasing that spreadsheet shortly. So ShakePay is competitive, but I'll be perfectly frank. I might be moving my buying a Bitcoin to a different exchange after doing this research. I might be able to accumulate more Satoshis by moving to an exchange that has as equal or lesser of a spread than ShakePay. The cost of buying in is free with ShakePay, but there's other exchanges that have the same cost of $0 or 0%. So ShakePay is good, but you know, who knows? I might be moving on. We'll see.
There's other there's always news breaking on this show, even if it's personal news. What's next?
So we have Venmo and Bitcoin. So Venmo is a mobile payment service owned by PayPal. On the 20th of April, they announced to its 77 million users, they can now buy, hold, and sell Bitcoin for as little as $1. According to the 2020 Venmo customer behavior study, more than 30% of Venmo customers have already started purchasing crypto or equities, 20 of which started during the pandemic. In addition to Bitcoin, Venmo has opened up the platform to Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash. You must be loving this, Joey. So Venmo will only allow users to buy, sell, or hold crypto. The company is not allowing users to send these currencies as a form of payment between users as of yet. This move will likely tap into the market of younger audience, which is already likely to be pro-crypto. And on a personal note, Joey, I have never used this service, so I can't speak on it, but I believe you have. So I was hoping you could give a little bit more insight into this.
Let me try and give you some color. I've never used Venmo, but I have some American friends who I've met over the years, specifically at Oshiega. Without going into the gory details, you can imagine how useful something like Venmo would be to transfer cash quickly at a music fest. And I've seen that app in, you know, situations where there's not, you know, for example, a ton of service where you can't connect to a bank and do an e-transfer. It just works, man. It's another app that's like pretty polished. Obviously, PayPal does a pretty good job in their, they're you know, the owners of Venmo now. I think they bought it in 2013. I'll note one thing here on the Bitcoin. This is still the filthy IOU for Satoshis that we talk so negatively about, and I think rightfully so. If you can't withdraw the Bitcoin, what the fuck is the point? It's supposed to be self-sovereign money. It's supposed to be self-sovereign store of value. And there's, you know, certainly some onboarding, some on-ramp that's required. And you know, it takes a bit of time to learn how to do all those things. But in my view, unless there's a concrete sort of tangible plan and timeline to figure out how to get your users into this mindset, i.e., you know, when you're going to be able to withdraw the coin, this is not good Bitcoin citizenship. As it stands, the stats on Venmo for their user base, they got about 7 million users between 18 and 34. And of those, about 4 million are between 25 and 34, while the other three are between 18 and 24. So that's pretty good as far as the target demo. Now, here's the thing I thought was interesting. The first wave of Bitcoin investors, the people who presumably know how to do the self-sovereignty thing, know how to manage their own wallets and manage their own keys and all this stuff. Even maybe the first two waves, maybe not just the first wave, the first two waves, we'll call it like the halving epochs as a wave. Both those waves have aged out of the 18 to 34 demo now. So either they're not quite there or they're very close. Like I'm 34, you're older than that. And I don't use any of these services to buy Bitcoin. I would though, probably if I was a little younger. And so maybe this will get people, again, we talk about this all the time, like the exposure you're kind of creating through different user-friendly avenues, whether it's this or Robinhood or whatever. I like it, but I think there's going to be, maybe not a pushback from the community, but I think there's like going to be, and correctly so, some some sort of changing attitudes, some souring attitudes on stuff like this, because these guys, PayPal, Venmo, you know, Wealthsimple, Robinhood, they know, okay, what Bitcoin's all about. They know, and they're not being conducive. They're not facilitating those responsibilities that users should be taking as part of the whole experience, as part of the whole ethos, as part of the whole sort of, you know, self-sovereign citizen development. So we'll see if it continues. I don't know. Len, what do you think? I think that it's I think it's good, but I think there's room to improve here for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a good way to onboard a whole bunch of new users into the Bitcoin community. The fact that it's owned by PayPal, and PayPal's been pretty pro crypto, I would imagine there's going to be some development on the Waymo side, and maybe that they'll allow people to actually, you know, send it to other people or you know, make it more, you know, conducive, as you said, to the way other exchanges operate with cryptocurrency. So this probably isn't the end result. There's going to be some changes going forward, and I'm looking forward to see what's going to be coming on the horizon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's good. It's good. What's next?
So we had a bit of a slide with the price of Bitcoin, and unfortunately it dropped below the 50K threshold during the past week. And it was the first time in almost a month that it's done that. So it's quite shocking. So some analysis was done, and it was showing that the long-term investors have been hodling, and the people that have been selling were relative newbies. They're the people that have bought in from 1 to 3 months ago. So those recent investors, they're paper hands. Let's get them out. Let's keep the long-term hodlers in. We know where it's going. The Bitcoin dominance dropped to under 50%, the first time since 2018, and this was huge. I've seen this a lot posted on Twitter, and those altcoin people, they were thumping their chests at this. And so let's see if we could bring this back up to 50%. And in comparison, the altcoins have been doing well. So for whatever reason, the altcoins as a whole haven't been dropping, or haven't dropped to the same extent as Bitcoin did. So there's rumors why this dropped so quickly and below the 50K threshold. The rumor of the double capital tax gains in the United States, doubling the capital gains tax in the United States for people earning over $1 million. This rumor looks like it's going to be false, because it may not be as high as what originally was reported, but this could be impacting the price of BTC. There will probably be a tax hike. You know, there's been a lot of spending over the past 12 months. There's going to be huge shortfalls, and they're going to have to try to recoup some of the costs somehow. And taxation is probably the easiest way, and maybe the best way to go about it. You never hear me say that again, but you know, it may be the best way for them to recoup some of the costs. But since then, Bitcoin has somewhat recovered, and it's now in the low 50s. Anything to add on this, Joey?
Okay. You know what I'm going to say right away. Good grab there. Good research from our crack volunteer research team, aka Len, hammering out some important data and a date there. So dominance for Bitcoin under 50% for the first time since 2018. Now, what I really should have looked at, and should have been more careful to look at myself when I was looking at these notes, how many more $1 billion coins do you think there are now than there were in 2018?
A heck of a lot more.
So that 50% number, I think, is irrelevant. It's irrelevant anyways because of the nature of the market cap metric. Like we've talked about on this show, Joey Coin, with you know, if somebody buys it for $1 and I print 10 trillion of them, well, guess what? That's a slanted market cap. That's one piece. But I think the more important piece that even the alt heads would have to admit to is that this thing is holding 50% in a market, an ecosystem where there's like, what, 10 times the competition now, probably, if not more. Like, it's probably some insane amount with all these app coins and sort of like functional token ecosystems that, again, my feelings on this are well known, but it's a garbage metric. I don't care about that. I also don't really care about this as a news item. And I know we cover it because it's a Bitcoin show and we talk about price all the time. And I'm guilty of this too. Len and I are in a group chat where we are buzzing anytime there's a significant price move, because we're all thinking about when to buy, when to, you know, really dump in a huge chunk of change and deploy capital on some of these dips. But the fact of the matter is that in the last, 3 weeks, we've seen an uptick of all caps, quote unquote, financial news Twitter accounts who seem to think they have the answers for all this stuff. So I'm talking about FX Hedgers and First Squawk on Twitter. I'll name the accounts. These accounts are garbage, man. Like they're hammering out these like, oh, there's going to be an 80% crypto tax. Like who said that to you? The Fry guy, the guy feeding pigeons in the park with his double mask outside. Who told you that? It's just another thing to consider. Yeah, it's another thing to consider that like these guys are driving down price. And I hope we talk about JP Morgan today, because if you want to talk about FUD, like that's some FUD, man. But I'll leave that for later. Other thing worth mentioning, I'm going to shout out a friend of mine, Twitter friend of mine, Ah Yeah Dieter Bob. I'll spell that for you, or maybe I'll mention it right in the show notes, because he's been saying privately on Telegram and on Twitter as well that it was only a matter of time until the price came back down to the 20-week moving average. And sure enough, that 46, 47-ish was pretty close. So yeah, good for him for calling that early. All things considered, like there's never been a more bullish time for Bitcoin. Like I was just alluding to earlier, JP Morgan today made a major announcement. We've talked on this show about all the different players coming on as far as payment rails, as far as governments, as far as, you know, you name it. And these price moves, you know, there was a time when a 62 to 47 price move would have scared me. And that time has passed. It's passed. I look at some of the stuff that's going on in the United States and Canada as far as like budget shortfalls, like Len was saying, and I just think this is a no-brainer, man. It's a no-brainer. What do you think, Len?
So the devil's advocate in me wants to just touch on one point. You were talking about the Bitcoin dominance being under 50%, and there's a heck of a lot of new altcoins with relatively large market caps. One thing that I would argue is that there's only so many dollars that are going to be thrown into the crypto market. And if you're not going to be in Bitcoin, you're going to be in everything else. So I think that people that weren't in Bitcoin before, weren't everything else before, are the same group of people now. Just because there's more coins out there, I think that, you know, it just goes to show you that there's probably more people that are not really pro Bitcoin, but they're pro everything else. There's only so many dollars out there that's going to go around, and you know, that's just my point.
I think that the other reason I wasn't going to say this, because obviously we get some flack for being too like anti-alt, but I would take Bitcoin down at like 25,000 if it meant bleeding some of these like just garbage tokens to death and, you know, watching them die in the street. I think about like I was looking today at like Aave token and all these other sort of, you know, come lately tokens that just are, they're so expensive. Like this thing is like $300 US a token or something like that, or a little over that. I think like who in their right mind, okay, excuse me, is buying like an Aave token over a share of Microsoft? Who?
There are people out there that are very pro Mark Cuban, and he was quoted as saying, "No, there are they follow him pretty, you know, pretty closely." And he was mentioning that he thought the market cap should be somewhere close to $500 billion for Aave. So if yeah, keep shaking. I agree, it might be rather high. I am trying to see what is the application of Aave. And you know what? The more I look into it, there may be a purpose for it. For, you know, what is the evaluation for it? I have no idea, but we should look more into it. I think there is a purpose for Aave. There may be a reason to keep it around, but I don't want to delve too far into it because I am not.
Oh my God.
No. I'm not that familiar with it, so it's hard for me to say that we do need to have this around, or we should definitely explore it in a future episode.
Maybe I'll have you give me like your top three, like your rationale for the best three or most relevant three altcoins, and then after 20 minutes of explaining, I'll just tell you it's shit to buy Bitcoin instead, and then we can go for an hour and we'll just release that one on Halloween or something.
I do want to say that we're going to be on the Danters, the Crypto Couples YouTube channel again on Wednesday night, discussing Bitcoin versus altcoins. And we're going to be obviously in the pro Bitcoin crowd, and we'll be fighting it hard against those altcoiners. So I'm looking forward to that. And we'll actually hear probably at that night what good these altcoins could present to that to us. Like, I'm curious to see. We'll have actually people that are pro altcoin, and hopefully they could present a good argument for them.
Yeah, the one guy I think is coming on. I forget his name. But Tim. Yeah, I digress. I don't want to say anything mean. I'm not trying to not make friends with people. I just, you know, I want to evangelize Big Orange. Okay, what's next? What else we got?
So we got turmoil in Turkey. So the crypto platform Thodex, based in Turkey, said its platform has been temporarily closed to address an abnormal fluctuation in the company accounts. Local media reports that Furuk Faith Ozer, apologies if I butchered that name, he's Thorex founder, has flown to Albania taking $2 billion of investors' funds with him. International warrants were issued for his arrest. Before shutting down transaction, Thodex was trading more than $585 million in cryptocurrency on its exchange, according to data from CoinMarketCap. The exchange also had about 400,000 users, 390,000 of whom were trading actively, according to the state news agency Anadolu. While Thodex's website said it would be back up shortly, exchange executives are deactivating their social media platform, and the platform's customer support group is inaccessible. The exchange website said there is no cause for concern and that negative news on the internet is not true. Meanwhile, Thodex founder and CEO shut down his Twitter account on Wednesday. This was Wednesday last week. Right before the exchange went offline, Dogecoin accounted for more than 53% of Thodex's $585 million trading volume, compared to a measly $10 million in Bitcoin. Guys, what are you doing buying Doge? Come on, buy more BTC. So this looks to be like a coordinated effort to shut off the exchange and to get the heck out of Doge. Also, another exchange in Turkey, VBitcoin. So the Turkish authorities said four people linked to the cryptocurrency platform VBitcoin have been arrested, accused of fraud. Hours earlier, the company abruptly announced it has ceased operations, citing financial strains. Last week, Turkey said it would ban the use of cryptocurrencies to pay for goods and services as of the 30th of April. Joey?
Well, a couple things here. Can you point to Turkey on a map?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah.
I can't do it. So that's one thing.
Geography is one of my strong things.
Good for you, not mine. I can't point to Albania on the map either, though. I gather they're close together. Here's a question I have for you, okay? This is a banana republic, it looks like, by the nature of this reporting. Also, I will no longer be using fake news as a term. I will only be using negative news on the internet that is not true as a nomenclature for things I don't like on television. Joking aside, we've seen this before from countries banning crypto or exchanges flying the coop. There's some speculation that the Thodex founder, Mr. Fly to Albania, I'm glad you had to read all those names, by the way, instead of me, that he just basically got ahead of the Bitcoin ban. And I wouldn't be surprised if he got ahead of the Bitcoin ban. I almost wouldn't even be mad unless I had a significant amount of money there. But we talked about this on this show before, and I've said this on other programs as well. This news item has one key piece here. And it's that you're allowed to hold, buy, and sell cryptocurrencies, but you are not allowed to use them to pay for goods in Turkey. Nothing to me says crisis of confidence in a currency like those few words. And that's when people say that the Americas or Europe or you name it is going to ban Bitcoin. Like this story, for most people, I think, would trigger the same response. Like, this is a currency crisis. They're having problems keeping people interested in using their domestic currency.
The Turkish lira.
Yeah. Like, what do you think would happen if this happened in America or Canada? What do you think people would say? They would know why it was happening and they would triple down on it. And because of the nature of the currency, the Bitcoin currency or the Bitcoin asset, it's almost impossible to carry out this sort of like, you know, ban. You're going to be able to set up a BTC pay server or whatever, right? Or take P2P transactions. Like short of going like to a business and trying to shut them down, or like going to someone's house. Like how are you going to enforce this? What is the plan? And that's in a country like Canada or United States where there's huge digital infrastructure as far as like law enforcement, huge police forces, pretty docile population, Everyone is huddled in these city centers where this stuff would be like easy-ish to track down. They still couldn't do it. And so I think about something like this in Turkey, and it's only a matter of time until you see the story, you know, in 2 weeks or whatever, P2P Bitcoin transactions in Turkey up 500% on.
Yeah, of course. This happened in Nigeria and other African nations where they banned cryptocurrency spending. So the adoption rate spiked. You were talking about the Turkish lira, like how it's a, you know, it might be a failed currency. Just to give you some insight on that, in the past year, it's dropped 25% in value against the Canadian dollar. So just some more food for
thought. Surprise, surprise. Like that's, man, and again, like I'm biting from Matt O'Dell here, and Sailor, of course, has this you know, widget maker on his website. Everything trends to zero in Bitcoin terms, and you're seeing it in every sovereign currency, the American dollar, Canadian dollar, British pound, like the price of Bitcoin keeps going up. And these countries that don't have mechanisms to control currency issues, be it through printing or taxation or other mechanisms, other means that governments use and fiscal policy that's available to like a first world government, the hill is so steep. Once you start going down in one of these countries that's not quite first world, there's no coming back, man. There's no coming back. So Godspeed if you're Turkish. I hope that you you have your stack, your cold card, your open dime, whatever, and keep on it, man. Keep using the P2P stuff, and let's get this coin.
Yeah, marhaba to our Turkish listeners, and shukran for listening in.
What was that? How long you been sitting on that?
So I'll go to our next topic.
Wait a minute. What did you just say?
I greeted our Turkish listeners and I thanked them for listening to our podcast.
Outstanding. I echo that sentiment. Okay, now you can go on.
So Gemini, you know them. They're the custodian of Bitcoin. So them, they have an app and they're going to be allowing people to buy and sell Bitcoin through their app, which could be linked to Apple Pay and Google Pay. And this is a huge thing, Joey. So they announced that you could link your debit cards to Apple Pay and Google Pay to purchase single purchases or reoccurring buys. And so that's something you like along the ShakePay front. Gemini currently has 13.6 million users. Apple has 507 million users as of September 2017. I have no idea how many users since then. I tried looking at Google Pay to see how many numbers of users they have. I cannot find it, but it's been reported that it's significantly less than Apple Pay. But nonetheless, between Apple Pay and Google Pay, that's a huge market which Gemini could be tapping into. So Gemini's website shows that this is available in Canada, but I did not test it out to see if it was rolled out to Canadians. So this move will open up the doors to more retail investors. And it's I think this is a great thing. Joey, do you have anything else to say on it?
Yeah. I have an Android phone. I have a Pixel 5, brand new-ish, I guess. It's like a seven-month-old phone now. I have Google Pay on my phone. I have a TD Canada Trust credit card and debit card, and neither work on Google Pay. And so I think this is a Canadian bank problem. It's not a Gemini or a Google problem. I think it's a problem with the retail-facing vendors, which... Again, said on this show before, like talk about a death rattle. These guys just will not stop trying to destroy their businesses, and they just will do anything they can to become irrelevant as fast as possible. That's one piece. You're right though, Len. This is a very important thing. I wrote in our notes here, like, am I supposed to be looking at this as like, are these like breadcrumb stories here? Stuff like Apple and Google, including Bitcoin as far as payment rails, stuff like payment on phones that are made by some of these manufacturers. Like Google Pay is not new technology. That number that you were saying before, like you couldn't find the number of Google Pay users. As far as I know, all you need is NFC and like a semi-recent iteration of the Android operating system and a bank that's willing to put the card on. And that number, especially if you think about like third world countries where Android phones are sort of the norm, that's got to be enormous. Enormous.
So from my research, just don't mean to cut you off. From what I understood when I was reading, the total amount of Google Pay and Samsung Pay users equal the Apple Pay users.
Hmm.
So okay. I know what you're saying, that you know Google has a lot of users, especially in third world countries. So their user base is humongous. But for whatever reason, it's not catching on in the Google Pay app. So,
Okay. I think this is all good news. Like, this is what I'm talking about. When, like, every week now, we've done this show five times or in the middle of the fifth time. Every week we have these stories where I think to myself, like, everything we talked about here is either outright bullish or has a bullish angle you can look at that's like pretty reasonable. And so I look at something like this. I look at the Turkey thing. I look at the Shake Pay. I look at like all this stuff. And I think to myself, like, you know, all this is happening, right? You see it all. It's in the news. It's on Twitter. What is the rationale for that giant price drop, for example? Like, what? Who is selling Bitcoin at these prices with all this other stuff going on? And I just think to myself, it's free. It's free Satoshis, man. Buy those dips.
But you're a long-term hodler. So the analysis was showing that the people that bought in 1 to 3 months ago are the ones that were selling off en masse. So there you go. So that answers your question, who it was. It's the people that are... they're not long-term investors, or they're maybe using this as a way to increase their wealth with through trading. So.
Okay. Well, great. I'll take them. I'll take all their Satoshis. I got all my recurring buy set up. I'm pumping in money into this thing like I've never pumped in money before. So I'll take them. That's okay with me. Yeah, it's okay with me. All right, what's next? That's the A block. We finished the A block.
All right, so we're going to jump onto a bunch of Canadian stories. We'll start with Bitfarms. It's traded on the TSX Venture Exchange, and they're going to be expanding operations and opening up mining facility in Argentina. It's going to be a 210 megawatt facility. They have signed a 8-year deal with the power company, and they're going to be getting favorable deal on cheap energy. And this is on the heels of an announcement from October 2020, where they said they would be opening up an 80 megawatt. So that's from 80 megawatts to 210 megawatt facility in Argentina. So the company is targeting to have an 8 exahash per second by the end of 2022, which is significant. This week, it was operating and pumping out at 1.38 exahash per second, which at the time was the largest for a publicly traded company in North America. And that's since been increased to 1.42. So as of today, they're 1.42 exahash per second. They also joined the Foundry pool. That's a United States-based mining pool. And by simply joining them, they instantly boosted their hash rate by 15%. Anything to add with this one, Joy?
So you said 210 megawatts?
Yes, that they're going to be opening a mining facility, 210 megawatts in Argentina.
I want to draw a picture for you because I think this is lost on a lot of people. And I looked this up like months ago, but I obviously, like, you don't share the B block stories with me, but I just was able to find it again. 1 megawatt, I'm reading this right off Google. 1 megawatt is equivalent to the energy produced by 10 automobile engines. A megawatt hour is equivalent to 1,000 kilowatt hours. It is equal to 1,000 kilowatts of electricity used continuously for 1 hour. It's about the equivalent to the amount of electricity used by 330 homes during 1 hour. So for them to have a 210 megawatt mining operation is enormous. It's enormous. That's a ton of power. And I would argue, as far as like the case against altcoins, Marty Bent said this, I think, and a couple other people, which I hadn't really thought about before, the physical infrastructure and resources being deployed around the world for Bitcoin is miles, eons, light years ahead of any of this other bullshit token economy stuff. No one is deploying stuff the same way Bitcoin is. No one is adopting physical resources and resource use the same way Bitcoin is. And I know this is the boil the oceans crowd, but guess what, man? Like, energy talks. Energy is quality of life. Energy is the Western way. Like, this is huge for people to put this much money into something like this with this much firepower. Incredible. I'm happy to hear this, man. It's great. And Canadian, like, you can't go wrong with this. This is a great story.
Not just that, like, also investing in Argentina, it's a Western, Western country, so they're not mining it in China. Joining the Foundry USA mining pool is actually really good because that boosted them to the fifth in terms of mining pools. So they're number five in terms of overall hash rate. The top four are Chinese: Ant Pool, F2 Pool, Via BTC, BTC.com. So those four are Chinese, and the fifth one, Foundry USA, is obviously in the United States. So Bitfarms joining them, it kind of helps solidify Foundry as being a major player in the mining pool scene. So next one I have is Hive Blockchain, traded under the TSXV as HIVE. They have chosen to mine Ethereum Classic and sell those coins to assist in covering electricity and basic general and administration costs while saving in cold wallets their Bitcoin and Ethereum production. So good on them for selling their shit coins, the Ethereum Classic, and keeping Bitcoin and Ethereum.
I almost pulled my hair out there. I know you're reading, so maybe you can't see my video, but I was on the edge for a second. I don't care if people want to mine shitcoins, even though like, look, Ethereum Classic was 51% attacked like 3 years ago, two years ago, something like that. It was
done 3 times last year.
Oh, last year. Okay. So even more recently, I only remember the one from a few years back.
I think it was 3 times in a month. It was like 3 times in a very short period of time.
Okay. So why mine that? Why not mine like Grin or something? One of these other shitcoins that's like on ASIC and like use that money for.
So when you use ASIC, they have a lot of GPU miners. So it's more specific to mine Ethereum and Ethereum Classic along those lines. So they don't have the infrastructure. They do have some infrastructure to mine Bitcoin, but they do have a lot of GPU miners. That's why they're mining those other ones like Ethereum Classic.
I think Grin may actually be GPU too. I might have spoken out of turn there. But I'm sure somebody in the show, whatever comments will blast ass on me for that. Sorry, guys. I got excited there. Okay, what's next?
So we got the 3IQ ETF, the Bitcoin Fund, which is listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange, has received regulatory clearance for dual listing of the Bitcoin Fund on NASDAQ Dubai, making it the Middle East first index cryptocurrency digital asset-based fund.
Wow, Dubai. How's it possible? Like, how's it possible that these guys are getting the Bitcoin funds before the United States?
There's 9 awaiting approval by the SEC.
Oh my God. Like, I am... man, whatever. I heard today a clip from Pierre Poilievre asking about the cost of regulations in Canada and the number of regulations. And I didn't put this together with the story you just gave me, obviously, but you know, for all the regs we have here, it's amazing that America, like, you know, whatever, the home of capitalism, can't figure out the ETF thing after like 4 years of trying, basically. They still can't figure it out. Yeah, you're shaking your head. I don't know. It blows me away.
And you keep touting that guy. You bring up a lot of his, you know, I noticed you've been, we won't go into politics. We'll leave that alone.
So he's good for a 30-second clip. I'll say that much.
So the next one I have is Canada's DMG blockchain acquired 3,600 Bitcoin mining ASICs. This will bring their hash rate up to 500 petahash per second. Their ticker is DMGI, and they're traded on the Venture Exchange. So in comparison, you know, they're kind of the minnow in the grand scheme of things with 500 petahash in comparison to Bitfarms, where they're in 1.42 exahash. But this might be a big player over time, maybe a value play. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to it, but the ticker is there. You may want to consider looking into it, Joey.
Not financial advice, but like these stocks, they just seem to track the price of Bitcoin. So if you can get like 1,000 shares or something for $10, I don't know, man, it's hard not to, that's for sure. Like,
today we had Bitfarms, their price went up 23-24%, like at least by midday. If there's good news, like, you know, if you hear that their hash rate has increased or something along those, you know, that's obviously going to pump the stock up. That's going to be above and beyond what's going on with Bitcoin. So looks like these guys are actively trying to boost their hash rate. And every time they do so, every time the news is reported as that, their stock does go up. So, I mean, this might be something to consider throwing a few bucks in. Joey, again, not financial advice, but DMGI. So anyways, news out of the Hut 8 camp. They announced they'll be joining the Foundry Services mining pool. We discussed that earlier about... So Hut 8 is now also joining the USA Foundry Services pool. So, all right. So, you know, it looks like a lot of Canadians are jumping on Western mining pools. So this is great news in my eyes.
It is good. It's worth mentioning that everyone's favorite conservative to hate, Peter Thiel, has been framing the Bitcoin mining problem and the Bitcoin problem as a China is the enemy here problem, and we need to mobilize here in America to prevent Bitcoin from becoming a Chinese asset. And I see stories like this, and I know this has probably been in the making for a long time, so I don't know if I would attribute this to those comments or that sentiment, but I think you're going to see more stories like this because it's easy for an American politician, maybe more so than a Canadian one, though again, we won't get into politics on this show. It's easy for an American politician to frame favorable regulatory environments in some of the United States as far as Bitcoin mining or Bitcoin holding or Bitcoin investing in ETFs and things of that nature as a, we need to do this to stop the Chinese government and Chinese, the Chinese power from expanding out of Asia even more than it already has. I think that's a reasonable policy position to have these days as a member of the American government. And I suspect that, you know, if social issues sort of remain, even if they remain at the fever pitch they're at now, I think in the next election, I think the fulcrum, if you're an American, you know, 3 years away, there's a high probability that it's Chinese dominance. And this is just another thing that you can add to the list of potential campaign promises anyways.
I think of over the last few years, the Chinese miners that have been mining Bitcoin, billions of dollars have been flowing into China. Once they mine it, they sell it. So, you know, there may be some truth to that there's, you know, there's a connection between China and Bitcoin, but then again, there's also, like, right now there is a movement to ban Bitcoin mining in China because it's so power hungry and they're trying to reduce the, you know, the greenhouse gases caused by coal plants. But I guess this is going to be a topic for another day, Joey. So
I'm interested in this topic. I do think I think we'll get to a point where this is going to be, like, people talk about mainstream adoption of the coin being the thing that drives media coverage, but I think it's going to wind up being this. Honestly, because it's a little bit more appealing to most of the electorate, and they can draw a parallel, right? And I don't know. We'll see.
So I forgot to mention that Hut 8 is traded under Venture Exchange under the ticker HUT. So
outstanding tickers for all that stuff, like we said before. All these guys just snapped up great tickers on the exchange. Good for them.
So next I have the Canadian home prices. We talked about this last week, and a listener actually wrote in and said on our YouTube, and he said that housing market commentary should be elaborated on. BC and Ontario are driving the cost averages up. Alberta, Saskatchewan, etc. are on the way down for 3 years. It's not a true Canadian average when stripped back. So apparently the numbers were reported last week of 718,000, I forget the exact number, was primarily due to BC and Ontario and not really really reflective of the rest of Canada. So I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that, Joe. I just wanted to basically give a thumbs up to the listener that wrote into our YouTube page. And another comment from a YouTube listener, it was mentioned that he would be returning back to Tim Hortons to buy coffee if they offered Satoshis for the Roll Up the Rim campaign. I think that's a brilliant idea. And obviously I can't take credit for that. Somebody else wrote it in, and I hope that Tim Hortons would do that. I am not a coffee drinker, but I would actually head into Tim Hortons and buy coffee for my wife just to collect the Satoshis.
I would take some of that sugary slop if it meant I could get a couple of sats back. I want to talk about the housing comment. First of all, thank you, listener, viewer, for writing on YouTube. I encourage everyone to go have a look at the YouTube channel. Like I said, Len absolutely like yamming out videos and content. So I appreciate that. And I hope you guys do too. The housing market thing is an interesting topic. And I think the person that wrote the comment is right, but I'm not sure what difference it makes. Ultimately, you know, we've talked on this show about the sort of nature of markets and altcoins and, you know, demand and supply on Bitcoin side and altcoin side and all that stuff. And you can kind of like draw a line between that ecosystem and the housing ecosystem. You know, if the housing market in Ontario and BC is driving the market, but the housing prices aren't going up anywhere else, well, what does it matter? The fact of the matter is, if people wanted to live in those other places in big enough numbers, they would rise too, but they don't. And so they're not going up that much. I think if the housing market is being driven by Ontario and BC, then it's because that's where people want to live. And the people who are moving out of Ontario and BC seem to want to stay there, even if the housing prices are super high. So, you know, two sides of a coin makes a market, I suppose. But I don't see how Ontario and British Columbia driving the housing prices up is not indicative of the quote unquote broader market. It is the entire market by the sounds of things. And so maybe it doesn't encompass, you know, in terms of like available inventory, 100%. But certainly in terms of interest, it's close to 100%. And that really is what matters, the interest. I don't think the inventory matters quite as much.
So let it be known, if you write in a comment, we will, you know, we could talk about it on our podcast.
I will attack you.
Well, maybe not attack you. I mean, at the very least, we'll discuss it. It's a possibility we could discuss it. So I encourage everybody to write in, and perhaps we'll be talking about it on a future episode. So I'm done with the Canadian stories. I'm going to be moving on to the rest of the news stories, and we'll be leading off with JP Morgan. And today we had some news that they'll be launching a Bitcoin fund for rich clients after years of bashing crypto. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that, Joey.
JP Morgan had a tweet out, or Zero Hedge, I should say, had a tweet from JP Morgan back in January about how they thought that Bitcoin was destined to drop in price, if not completely fall apart. They cited the mania, they cited the bubble, they cited the tulips. It's, you know, it's a Satoshi dice of FUD that you've seen over and over again. This is the playbook on Wall Street. I have hiccups here from this fizzy pop. It's the Wall Street playbook. It's drive the price down as much as you can, spread as much nonsense as you can, and then buy up the stuff you'd like. We see it with short reports. We see it with news leaks. We see it with all caps, news, Twitter accounts. We've seen it from every angle, through every medium. The message is always the same. Bitcoin is going to fail. And then what happens? In this case, less than a quarter later, of course, consumer demand forces capitulation from these bigger institutions, and they got to buy. The question isn't if the banks and other, you know, big players are going to buy. It's not a question, because customer demand will drive them in that direction. The question is, what price are they going to buy at? And are you going to sell it to them as a pleb? That's up to you. But I love this story for so many reasons. I can just picture Jamie Dimon just upset in his gold throne about how he's been publicly shaming Bitcoiners and publicly naysaying crypto as a space in general. And he's just like, now he's got to bend the knee. Like, how do you swallow that? I don't know. I guess I'll ask him if he ever comes on the show.
If they could monetize it, Joey, if they could somehow find a way to increase their pocketbook and make more money, they'll swallow their pride. They don't really care. Good for them, because you know that's their MO, and their shareholders is number one for them, and they're finding that this is a good way for them to increase exposure into the, well, obviously increase exposure into the crypto market and increase their customer base, potentially increasing the money, their profits. So the winds are blowing in the BTC direction. So next I have this is something you'll love, and I'm sure you heard about it, but Sean Culkin, I've never heard of this guy, but whatever, of the Kansas City Chiefs. He will be receiving 100% of his $920,000 base salary in Bitcoin. He's been quoted as saying, "It makes the most logical sense to be paid in sound money that I believe protects its purchasing power over time." I don't know who Sean Culkin is. I haven't watched football in many years. Good for him, though. This is a real jump. I don't think anybody else has taken 100% of their salary in BTC. So he might be the first person in North America, at least, that is doing it. So he's breaking ground. We'll probably hear more of this going forward. I know we talked about the Sacramento Kings offering their players, you know, they could be paid in BTC, but this is strictly him getting paid in BTC. Fantastic stuff.
I watch a lot of football. I am in a fantasy league every year. I play a ton of Madden. I'll eat you up in Madden. I was very good when I was a kid, and I'm still okay. I still don't know who Sean Culkin is, I'm afraid. So he's pretty far down on the depth chart, I guess. That aside, this kind of stuff, like we talked about a bit on the NBA side with the Kings, this kind of stuff it's about the players for sure. Okay, the players have a role to play here because they have to be facilitating something like this. The clubs can't facilitate it. But I think that what you may start seeing is clubs using Bitcoin and enticing players to take their salary in Bitcoin, because it will help them skirt the cap. And the NFL's got a much less forgiving cap than the NBA does. The, you know, the league year starts in June, I think, and you have to be under the cap at the beginning of the league year. There's like a time where you can float, I think, after the draft, but before the start of the fiscal league year, quote unquote. This kind of stuff makes a difference. And, you know, like when Okung took his salary, right, or half his salary, that was half a big his story. Salary,
but he didn't take it. He got it in fiat and exchanged half of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
this is different. He's getting paid.
I thought he's on with Lightning Zap too, isn't he?
Correct. That is.
Yeah. So that's, correct, yes. I think that's the same thing Russell Okung is using. I don't know exactly what the mechanism is that they're firing from fiat to Bitcoin, but I know it's the same service provider, headed up by Jack Mallers, the hoodie man himself. The salary caps in pro sports lend themselves better to Bitcoin as a salary chunk than any other sort of salary ecosystem that I can think of at the moment, because it helps you get through the cap issues. If you can pay people in value, so to speak, as opposed to American dollars, they're getting more value for their money and you're getting more value for your money under the salary cap as a club. Will the NFL allow it? I don't know how far they'll go. I don't know what the eventual onboarding looks like. I know that Jack Mallers, in his interviews during the Okung, sort of the Okung era, those interviews were not favorable to the league, and the league has not said anything about either of these players, as far as I know. So let's see if it continues to work, right? Like obviously Okung got really lucky, signing on back in whatever it was, December. And the thing has tripled in price since then, or thereabouts. Will Culkin be lucky too? I don't know. If he does get lucky, there's no better way to sell Bitcoin than to show up at work on your $900,000 contract, driving a $900,000 car because of the Bitcoin you took half your salary in, or in his case, your full salary in. So market effects, man. If number go up, then more people are interested, athlete or otherwise.
It sounds like from his comments, he's a long-term hodler. So he truly believes that there is value in storing, you know, his wealth rather than going into the fiat currency or staying in a fiat currency and kind of gambling to see if he could buy $920,000 worth of goods and services later on. So good for him. So next, we also have another football related story. We have Trevor Lawrence. He's a prospect expected to be the number one overall pick. We don't know exactly where he's going to land in the draft, but he's a highly touted young lad. He has signed an endorsement deal with the cryptocurrency portfolio management app Blockfolio. He accepted his signing bonus exclusively in crypto, which is already worth more today than it was deposited on Friday.
Well, Trevor Lawrence, by the way, like, talk about a jawline. This guy's, honest to God, this guy has a jawline like I've never seen in my life. So number one, good for him. Two, Blockfolio, big get here. Lawrence is going to be a franchise quarterback until someone tells him he can't be.
He's not a punter?
No. And these quarterbacks get picked first overall, especially with the pedigree he has from his time at Clemson. Excuse me. He's going to get all the opportunity in the world to shine. And I think what you're going to start seeing, you know, from the Athletic ecosystem, the Athletic environment, is these guys who are a little younger than you or I, Len, who bought Fortnite skins and bought NBA 2K packs and bought Madden Ultimate Team cards, they're going to be a lot more friendly to this stuff than you and I were. And, you know, I think it's only a matter of time to see more salaries, but certainly the people coming into the pro ranks in all the big four in North America and probably soccer in Europe as well, these guys are going to be more open to this kind of thing. And even if they're not doing the full whatever, wow, we got to convert from here to here immediately, we got to use Lightning Zap, they're at least going to be buying it, talking about it on Twitter, on whatever, right? Like, it's this is why it, like, the age demo that Bitcoin is kind of like fence sitting between right now, the 35 to 44 and the 18 to 34, so important, because this next generation now is going to be so much more digitally inclined, like virtual ownership inclined. They're going to be a lot more friendly toward this stuff. And Lawrence and Blockfolio, like, the top pick in the draft signed a deal with Blockfolio. I don't even think he's got a shoe deal yet. And the guy signing on with a crypto portfolio app for your phone. Incredible. It's all good news, man. Everywhere you look, it's just good news.
I wonder if the NCAA is going to use this as a Bitcoin as a way to circumvent the payment of their athletes, because I know that you can't pay them directly because that would make them professional athletes and that's against the NCAA rules. But maybe if Bitcoin is not considered a currency and you're handing them Bitcoin as a payment, it might be a way to entice somebody to come to a school and to just get around the existing NCAA rules.
Yet another example of bodies of power having a hard time continuing to enforce their reign in the era of Bitcoin and digital stores of value, digital sovereignty. So all good. Good for them. I hope other athletes take notice. Let's keep this train rolling.
So did you know that 6 years ago, Apple banned all Bitcoin apps on the App Store, Joey?
I didn't. That's interesting. Apple banned all Bitcoin apps. That's before my time in the space. So this is, it's news to me.
This was 6 years ago, but we come a long way, Joey, because a picture of the most popular finance apps on the iOS shows that they could all let you buy and sell Bitcoin. So the top six, is it six? Whatever it is, it's Robinhood, Coinbase, Trust, which is a wallet, Cash App, PayPal, Venmo, and Binance. So the most popular finance apps on the App Store are all involved with cryptocurrency. So we've come a long way, Joey.
Let's have a brief discussion here about Apple and maybe a few other companies, if you don't mind. I'm not sure if you have Q2 earnings on your sheet, Len, or Q1 earnings. No. Okay, so this week, we obviously had Elon today. Are we talking about Elon later? Should I wait?
We're not talking, but we could briefly mention them because I didn't look too much into their reports today, into their earning report. So it's hard for me to really speak on it with confidence.
Well, he sold about 100 million worth of his Bitcoin.
That I saw.
So that's, not a good Bitcoin citizen. But of note here this week, as far as earnings calls, Apple, Amazon, MasterCard, Microsoft, I believe Square and Visa will all have their calls this week and next week. So if there was ever a time to think about the companies that are building out and friendly to crypto platforms, crypto transactions, crypto, blah, 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 whatever, Bitcoin specifically for our intents and purposes, it's got to be this week, man. Like, let's see some guys put this on their balance sheet. Let's see some talk about hardware. Let's see some talk about software. Let's see what Apple and these guys come out with. Worth mentioning, Amazon, their new CEO was the head of AWS. So that's a guy who's been living in digital space for some time already and arguably has produced sort of the most valuable, scalable business of all time in AWS. So if there was ever a time to keep an eye on balance sheets and these companies that are friendly toward Bitcoin, it may be this week. I hope everyone pays attention. We'll definitely be talking about it if there's an ad, that's for sure.
So next I have Signature Bank. They currently hold $60 billion of client assets. They will now be offering those clients Bitcoin Bash cash loans. They're going to be going up against Silvergate. We talked about Silvergate in a previous episode. Signature says it's still in the process of doing its due diligence on the custodian of the Bitcoin. Silvergate works with Fidelity, Coinbase, Anchorage, and Bitstamp for its lending products. So, yeah, we got another player in the game. Silvergate is going up against Signature Bank is going up against Silvergate.
Yeah, let them. It's all that's good for consumers, good for retail. So let's have it.
So we have a very interesting story out of Jackson, Tennessee. They're considering mining Bitcoin and adding it to their public balance sheet. The mayor of Jackson, Scott Congar, is now exploring how to give public officials the option to be paid in Bitcoin. Did a little bit of research. The city of Jackson, Tennessee is approximately 66,000 people. So not the largest of metropolises out there, but we have another one that's on board.
Yeah, man, like Francis Suarez in Miami, obviously sort of pioneering this. Maybe our friends in Wyoming as well, though I'm not sure exactly what they're doing on the municipal level. But, you know, this stuff, again, only a matter of time, man, because it's a deflationary asset that's appreciating in value as far as dollar terms, and people want that. And so my other question for these municipalities that are thinking about this, maybe doing a little fence sitting, is do you want to attract great young talent? Because if you do, this is a thing you can do to compete with big metropolises around the United States, cities of more than 500,000 or 750 or a million in a lot of cases. How is Jackson, Tennessee going to compete with these guys? Well, here's how you do it. You offer Bitcoin as part of your salary. You offer cheaper homes or better mortgage rates for people who come and stay for 5 years. You offer these things. And this is something that takes no capital on your part to offer. It's just a little bit of work in the background that people may appreciate. So good for them. I'm glad to see that.
So, you know, US dollar Tether and all the FUD surrounding this, surrounding it over the past few months or even longer. Well, apparently it's going to be coming to Coinbase Pro. So hopefully this will put, that will put to rest all the FUD around it. And finally, the last news story I have is Celsius. There's the place where you could actually borrow against your Bitcoin. And there was some volatility in the market recently. So this is cause for concern for people that are thinking about doing this going forward. They said that due to market conditions, we recommend adding crypto to your Celsius account to secure your loan in case of a margin call. We'll be in touch with you directly if a margin call is issued for your loan. So be very careful if you plan on using the Celsius network or the Celsius account to borrow against your cryptocurrency. Because you never know. It could be volatile. And if it goes down, there could be a margin call and you'd be asked to pay. And you might have to liquidate some hard assets just to pay off your debt.
Is this not the case for every loan instrument with Bitcoin? Like, will BlockFi not call you on margin if the price drops low enough? They will not ask you to fund your account. Of course they will. This is the risk you run in these lending services, that you are not going to be able to get ahead of the price moves, which are violent. We've discussed how violent they can be. So if you want to play this game with the lenders, go for it. I'm not going to. I know the Danters, obviously, the YouTube channel that we're going to be on tomorrow or Wednesday, whatever day.
Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday. Like, they do it and some of their altcoin guests do it. Like, I am not doing it. I got other things earning money for me. Maybe my traditional equities could take care of that for me, or my home growing up in value can take care of that for me. But the Bitcoin, like, as part of the self-sovereign ethos, part of the hard money ethos, this is where I think a lot of people should start drawing lines, because you're going to get into trouble. And to be honest with you, like, I would count myself among this, among these people. Most of retail doesn't have the available capacity. If you're going to put like some significant chunk of Bitcoin in your Blockfolio, or not Blockfolio, sorry, your BlockFi or your Celsius wallet for lending, like, or borrowing, like, you're not typically going to have more. Like, are you really? You're in need of cash, and so you're going to use your Bitcoin as collateral, and then what? They're going to get you on a margin. You're going to put the rest of your stack in, like, your whole stack's going to be in there. There's other options for you if you need cash. And like we always say on this show, Bitcoin or otherwise, you don't invest money that you're going to lose. And I'll add here that you don't invest money you're going to need short term. Like, what's the point, man? Think about those things.
Another thing to consider, we just talked about it earlier in the episode about Thodex disappearing. When you're putting your crypto on any sort of exchange or any custodian service, there is a risk it could be, you know, it could disappear overnight. There could be regulations that come out, or, you know, the CEO might decide, you know what, I'm going to just pack it up and go. And at which point you have no recourse. It's gone. It's lost. And you just basically are holding empty bags. There's nothing you could do about it. So, that's something I would really consider of, you know, people should not do it. And, you know, a lot of people are, but not your keys, not your coin. That's another example. So, I want to transition over to the topic of the week, Joey, which is the Bitcoin carbon footprint.
This is very deep. I'm not only impressed that you've decided to dive into this, but I can't wait to offer blind commentary almost on the good research you've done here. So go ahead.
All right. So the Bitcoin mining consumes a lot of power. There's no doubt about it. It was reported this week it's consuming power at the rate of 129 terawatt hours. And the source for that is the Cambridge Bitcoin Electricity Consumption Index. The website for that, if anyone's curious, it's cbeci.org. So this number is, it actually uses more power than Norway, but less than the state of New York. So it's a significant amount of power currently that is used to mine Bitcoin, and that number is going to be going up. A report from 2018 from the University of Cambridge found that while the majority of Bitcoin mining facilities drew on renewables to some extent, the average share was just 28%. So in 2018, only 28% of the only 28% of green energy was used for Bitcoin mining. In September 2020, the report by the same university mentions that the green energy consumption for Bitcoin is 39%. So that is a jump of 10% of green energy in a span of 2 years. China powers most of the Bitcoin miners, but the mining adoption rate is increasing in Western countries. We talked about it with Foundry Services based out of United States. As discussed, Bitfarms is expanding in Argentina, where renewables make up to one third of the power generation from Argentina. So, and I would imagine this number would be climbing over time. China is cracking down on miners. We cannot go a week without our Inner Mongolia report, Joey. So we'll talk about Inner Mongolia now. They are a major Bitcoin producing region. They approximately 80% of the energy consumed out of Inner Mongolia is from coal-fired power plants. Only 4% is produced by diesel generators and a measly 3% by renewable energy sources. The closure of these Bitcoin mining operations will have a drastic reduction in the greenhouse gas emissions. Though the Chinese province of Sichuan is known to attract miners due to its cheap electricity and rich hydropower resources, the level of power generation capacity fluctuates depending on the season. And Bitcoin, you have to have a stable amount of power generation in order to mine. You can't have it go up or down. It doesn't work well in the Bitcoin mining field. Bitcoin has a carbon footprint comparable to that of New Zealand, producing approximately 36.95, we'll call it 37, megatons of CO2 annually. This is according to DigiEconomist. S&P Global released a report in 2019 that for gold production, 0.8 tons of CO2 was emitted per ounce of gold produced in 2019. So this is a stark difference depending on the region and if it's open pit versus underground mining. But on average, it was 0.8 tons of CO2 per ounce of gold mined. And the total amount of gold mined that year was 3,531 tons. That's according to BBC News. So that equates to about 2.8 megatons of CO2 that was produced in 2019. That number likely will not go down with green energy because a lot of the equipment used in gold mining, it's heavy equipment. It's going to be diesel, and it's hard to find efficiencies with those equipment. So you're likely going to have that number continue this to be flatline. It's not going to go up or down. Well, it's probably going to go up, but it's not going to go down to with green energy. Another thing to consider is the banking and financial sector. This is a sector of the market that can be cannibalized by Bitcoin. I was unable to find the greenhouse emissions that was produced by that sector, but I would imagine it to be quite high because you have to imagine all those banks, they occupy a lot of space. They have to be heated. They have to have electricity. So it's hard to actually capture how much greenhouse gases the banking and financial sector produce, but it should be significant. But one thing to consider is they're going to also be going along the lines of more greener energy usage like Bitcoin because they're going to be drawing on the same power sources as Bitcoin does. So as Bitcoin's green energy consumption increases, so will the banking and financial sector. So a few notes I have here, Joey. In January 2021, Hydro-Québec said it provides electricity to about 100 cryptocurrency mining clients. I had no idea that this is such a hotbed for mining clients, but here we go. And they have also regular requests of interest from many others. So the hydroelectric stations generate about 95% of Quebec's electricity. That's as the source from Canada Energy Regulator, the Canadian government. So the numbers in Ontario, and I've been looking in Ontario as well, we've been selling energy in Ontario, our surplus energy, and we've been selling that at a wholesale price. In 2017, for example, we sold it at the lowest price in the open market since 2002. And this is at a loss to all taxpayers Ontarians. So the whole prices in many cases are negative during periods of high demand. the Ontario NDP in 2013. So this is, you know, both sides of the political spectrum are basically claiming the same thing. So in 2013, the Ontario NDP claimed that $1 billion of surplus energy was sold off. Ontarians are essentially subsidizing hydro bills in places like Michigan and New York to the tune of $500 million per year. That's another quote I got. We're also selling surplus energy in Ontario to Ohio. So one thing I hypothesize, this excess energy, and you talked about it earlier, we should actually start looking at mining. Instead of selling it off at a loss, let's get some miners set up. We can start mining this excess energy. We can use this excess energy to start mining Bitcoin. And it's actually going to be, you know, we could put it on the public books and it's, you know, instead of selling at a loss, we're creating Bitcoin, and we could use that to fund our public, our healthcare, roads, whatever. So I don't know. There's a lot to digest there, Joey. I don't know if you want to dig in on that.
I want to first of all say that was that's incredible research you've done, as always. The thing I would want to just touch on briefly. You mentioned that you didn't have a number for the banking system as far as So you know, there's been many attempts to kind of quantify the energy consumption required to propagate the fiat money system. The one that I think wins out as far as the best metric is what is the consumption required in both defending and attacking the petrodollar from a military standpoint? Well, let's go and let's think about a few of these things. The Chinese Navy at the moment is deploying naval tonnage equivalent to the entire French Navy every single year. The American government is spreading democracy in almost every third world country around the world and has been for some time. That takes incredible amounts of manpower, both in deployment, in training, in munitions, in fuel, and you name it. It's an incredible, incredible, incredible spend on a scale that you cannot imagine. Certainly too much for us to discuss on this podcast. Then on top of that, you think about the oil consumption that's required and what that means as far as drilling and refining and exploring and offshore and pollution and all these kinds of things that the anti-Bitcoin crowd will screech about ad infinitum on Twitter and on YouTube and on the news and on all these other media places that give these clowns a platform. That aside, then we have to talk about stuff like the requirement of banks as far as the compliance and what it means to go across borders to get compliance and go into businesses and private individuals and the harping on people and the level of stress that it causes people and their mistakes under that stress. Like, you could go so deep as far as what is required to defend and required by some countries, namely China. I know we've mentioned them a few times on this show, to attempt to attack and destabilize the petrodollar system. It is unbelievably energy hungry as a process and as an environment. So I don't think the Bitcoin thing, as far as like energy consumption, is anything to worry about. That's one thing there that you touched on, but it's hard to quantify. And obviously I don't have a number for it. Nick Carter might have one. I've read so much of his stuff over the last while, but I don't remember if he actually puts a number on it. So that's one thing. The other thing that people need to think about with the Bitcoin energy footprint is the production and geographic arbitrage that's going to come into play if it hasn't already. Bitcoin mining is super energy intensive, but it's also very portable in a way that gold mining is not, in a way that defending petrodollar is not, in a way that all these other sort of environmentally disastrous policy positions are not. And so Bitcoin miners, like we talked about on this show, the Inner Mongolia report a few weeks ago, we discussed the floodplain that forced mining equipment, mining capacity out of China, even for a short time. The fact that you can even pick up and leave because it's going to be a rainy few months is something that no other resource production operation can talk about. In fact, gold miners have to go where the gold is, regardless of how difficult the process may be. And that's part of the reason that gold was so successful as a store of value for so long, because that natural defense against an elastic supply really makes a difference as far as keeping the price high and making sure that scarcity doesn't disappear overnight when the price goes up. So that was one piece. But Bitcoin, because of the nature of the algorithm and what it takes to mine a Bitcoin, you don't have that elasticity problem, and you can still travel and move around as far as energy arbitrage goes. Now, for the green proponents, the case that you would make is, look, if you can give me green energy for cheap, we will come to you. And not only will we come to you, we will come to you in numbers that are so voluminous that you will have no choice but to produce this green energy for us on as big a scale as possible, showing that this energy can work and showing its effectiveness in a large-scale operation that requires 24-hour uptime, aka, i.e. reliability, which obviously is a bit of an issue for green power in some cases, but I'm not an expert there, so I don't want to get too far into that. If you can prove to me that this green power works and is cheap and is effective, then of course I'll put my miners on wind, on solar, on whatever. I'll put it on a fucking gerbil on a wheel if it means that I'm going to be able to get coin every 10 minutes with some consistency. The problem is that so far that hasn't exactly been the case. Now, that doesn't mean there's not environmentally friendly ways to mine Bitcoin. Just because it's not a windmill, it doesn't mean that, or a wind turbine, I should say, doesn't mean that it's not energy efficient. And we talked about oil well gas flaring, how that's been able to be converted into mining capacity. SG Barbour on Twitter, SGBARBOUR, great guy to follow. He's doing this stuff for real. It's not a theory. It's not something he wrote up in a white paper. He's doing it. And so the more people get involved in something like that, the better off the oil and gas industry will be, and the better off that Bitcoin miners will be as far as capacity for available power and cheap energy. All these things combined, again, it seems to me that this is consistent with a problem that renewable proponents have had for some time. And the problem is that you can't show me that it's cheap. And even if you show me that it's cheap through subsidy or other means, you can't show me that it's reliable. And while government may be okay with expensive and unreliable, private citizens are not. Certainly where efficiencies are needed to be competitive, as we talked about before, there are countries that support, even if it's implicitly, the mining operations, China, for example. You have to be able to be competitive. And to be competitive, you need cheap and you need consistent. And so far, it seems to me proponents of green have been able to demonstrate neither. So I don't view this as a Bitcoin-specific problem for these guys. I view this as a problem that they're trying to paint with a trendy brush in broad strokes without knowing what they're talking about. And unfortunately, it seems to have caught on with the media, who, is sort of penchant to do such things for that group of people. But I don't know. That aside, I think if it worked, Len, like, people would use it. They would use it. And right now they're starting to find ways, but it's not there. And even that said, Bitcoin is still, I think, a lot cleaner, like in the ways I've just described, than people give it credit for.
Yeah, I agree. And I would also direct listeners to the Bitcoin Standard podcast. The April 19th podcast was a real eye-opener for myself. Saif went on an absolute rant of epic proportions, and he's talking about the greenhouse gas and the energy consumption of Bitcoin compared to other items that we commonly use in the household, such as the dryer for our clothes. I would highly recommend everybody take a listen to that podcast. It is fantastic.
That guy's an absolute murderer. Ever since he quit his job teaching at the American University in Lebanon, like, he just says whatever comes to his mind, and it's amazing. It's amazing. He takes no prisoners. Good for him.
Yep. So that's it for that topic. I'm not sure. Do you have a no coiner or a Bitcoiner of the week? Because I do.
It's the same guy, unfortunately, after today.
And who would that be?
It's Papa Elon. Ponzi scheme aficionado and electric car trickster. I don't have the numbers handy, but like, I follow enough guys from like traditional equities markets that hate.
So it was
Elon
$500
Musk.
Million dollars was it from the carbon credit?
Yeah, so $500 million from the carbon credit, and then another $100 million from Bitcoin, and they still, I think, only came out net 80 was it 83 million or something like that after all that? And I think if you enforce GAAP, generally accepted accounting practices, on their balance sheet, because most of these guys, when they do their reports, they report non-GAAP numbers in the call, and then they'll give you the GAAP numbers in the report. His GAAP numbers, he's at like an $80 million loss for the year. Their orders are down. They're slashing prices. Arguably, the stock is being held up by the ARK ETFs that are buying this thing in like unbelievable volume. You know, if you want to sell 100 million in Bitcoin, fine, but don't also be on Twitter pumping Doge memes. Don't also be on Twitter inciting the mob when it comes to alts. And don't be the guy who, you know, reaches out to Mike Saylor in a public forum, talks about how Bitcoin is the sound money, and then what's it been, 3 months, Len, if that, and he's out with 1/10 of his stack? Like, fine, but it just sucks that
people
like put these guys on a pedestal. We didn't do that on this show, and on the Two Whites and a Blue show we talked about how this is not good for Bitcoin to have this guy on board. It's good for the price, but you can't have this kind of guy on board because you already know that he ebbs and flows with the whatever wind is in his sails, whatever's good for him that day or that week. And I think pretty soon you're going to start to see gaps in his, in his persona, let's say, even among his most faithful supporters. So he's both my no coiner and my Bitcoiner this week.
I have to be honest. He was my no coiner of the week a few weeks ago. So, but that's, you know, nonetheless, I do have somebody different for each of the two. Sean Culkin, the NFL player that is taking $900,000 of his salary in Bitcoin. He's my Bitcoiner of the week. That's a huge jump for somebody in pro sports, in American pro sports. It's a great move by him. I hope that he comes in and makes bank on that. We'll see what happens in the end, but it's a bold move, and he's my Bitcoiner of the week. And my no coiner of the week, the European Central Bank president, Christine Lagarde. You know her?
She's the worst. Skeletor. I hate Christine. Like, every time she's on TV, I just like, what's she going to say now that's going to piss me off? I can't help it.
All right. She's been warning about the use of Bitcoin for illegal activities. This is interesting because just last week we talked about the former acting CIA director, Michael Morell, and he was quoted as saying, cases of laundering through Bitcoin remain small compared to the volumes of cash laundering through the traditional banking system. So that's one of the legal banking, legal activities. And it looks like fiat currency is leading the league in that. And Bitcoin is a far, far second. So Christine, I'm not sure if you're getting the right information there. She called Bitcoin funny business. All right. Didn't consider Bitcoin to be a real currency. Okay. She's claiming that central banks won't be holding Bitcoin. And I personally believe that's a good thing. I don't want their dirty hands touching Bitcoin. Let's keep Bitcoin pristine and far, far away from the dirty hands of the central banks. She claims Bitcoin has a role of facilitating criminal activity. I kind of find this to be rich. Let's see. They're nickel and diming us on taxes to fund their pet projects. All right. So I can't believe she comes out with this. You know, this smooth brain criminal here. She should rub the last two brain cells in her head to come up with something that doesn't screw over the commoners. Like, printing money, you know, quantitative easing, the printing of money, let's be honest, that's a criminal activity. That's essentially taking away our hard-earned monies. We go to work every day, slave away at our desk or, you know, wherever, to make money, and then they turn around and they print money to cover up their mistakes. And in the end, that impacts us, because what the money we've earned is now it has less value. So the time we invested in working to actually make the money, it has less value. And that's terrible. Like, the fact that you're doing this, that you're just printing money to cover up your mistakes, screw you. You're my Bitcoiner of the week. And you should shut up and you should start investing in Bitcoin.
Do you want to hear, listen to this. I'm surprised you didn't bring this up. In 2017, Lagarde was convicted of financial negligence, right? She was embroiled in a scandal. The article is here, and I kind of know some of the details. It was when she was like the, she was the French she was the finance minister in France under Sarkozy in the late 2000s. And there was some, I guess, issue with some decisions she made about a case where there was some kind of money laundering and she was involved in it. Anyway, I think she was like up for a fine and a year in jail. Obviously, I don't know if the year in jail was ever on the table.
They rewarded her by
really.
Giving her this position. So
yeah, exactly. Right. And so like these guys who are always talking about like, oh, well, you know, we want to protect you against criminals. Like how many of them have either facilitated criminal activity or have just like been outright involved in criminal acts? The answer is like a tons of them. And I see stories like this and I think to myself like, okay, why do I care what you think about illegal activity? Why do I care what you think about illicit money use? Like every dollar you have produced has been, you know, what do they say about, for example, like if you get a $50 bill, like what are the odds it's been used to snort a line of blow? It's like 20% or something like that. You know what I mean? Like these guys know what they're doing and what they're saying is wrong. This is the same woman who got on TV a few years ago and said into a camera that she took a survey of European consumers and they don't really care about privacy that much. They just want the digital dollar to work for them. Like it's bogus. It's bullshit. And they know it's bullshit. And they know that you know it's bullshit, but they know that you can't do anything about it until now. And that's the case for Bitcoin. So good. That's a good pick. Anytime you want to fire me up, we talk Lagarde and I'll be there, man. There'll be steam coming out of my ears for sure.
You know, if somebody like you or I, like we do something wrong, we fail to pay our taxes or do it incorrectly, they'll drop the hammer on us. When they make a mistake, what do they do? Let's print money. Let's do something. And there's no recourse for them. They have an easy out. You know, us, we don't. We just go to work, we pay our bills, and in the end, we have less at the end of the day. Like, come on, give us a break. Yeah. Like, you know, whatever. That's why she's my no coiner of the week.
Sad.
So next, we'll go to the price of BTC again, if you want to report it in the US dollars.
I'd love to. In American dollars, $53,760.
Not bad. So Canadian, that's equating to $66,829.28. Joey, just want to touch on one last thing. Are you a financial advisor?
I'm not. Are you?
Nor am I.
That's
so I wouldn't take anything as we say as gospel. So do your own due diligence. Don't listen to us and don't take our advice.
Do your own damn research, man. A couple of show-related announcements. One, like we've mentioned a few times today, we'll be on the Danter's YouTube channel, Tim and Nancy Danter, every Wednesday talking Bitcoin speaking Bitcoin to the unwashed masses. Starting this week, Thursday night, Len and I are going to take guests. At least for the duration of the lockdown, if they're well received, we'll keep doing it. I really have no opposition to it. And I'd like to do a mix of the average Twitter crowd, getting some background on people's sort of Bitcoin journey and what they're up to and what they think about the future of BTC, and people who are a little more influential. So this week we have what I would call a more influential guest who'll be talking Taproot with us. If you don't know what Taproot is, you should get in the know, because I don't have a ton of familiarity with it either, but I'll be doing some research leading up to that interview. I hope you guys tune in. Those will drop, as long as I'm not too lazy on Thursday night, I'll clean those up and put them out Fridays, and the flagship will continue to drop Wednesday mornings.
We also have one very prominent guest coming up next month. I don't want to drop any names, but it's one of the royalty in the podcasting world, the Canadian podcasting world. So I hope that he said he's coming on. I hope that he follows through. I'd love to talk to him and pick his brain about Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Len, good show. We'll talk to you soon and keep stacking, buddy.
Yes, sir. Same to you. Thank you so much.